and us at 1007.
Major funding for the connection is provided by Macromedia, the software company helping to redefine what the web can be. Available on the web at www.macromedia.com.
I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. You can almost hear the fingernails scraping as Senate Majority Leader Trent Lott clings precariously to his leadership position after his now notorious comments at Strom Thurmond's 100th birthday party. Lott spent last evening on Black Entertainment Television in his latest effort to save himself.
We're back with Senator Trent Lott. Senator, let's talk a little bit about why so many people find this hard to accept. And that, quite frankly, as you know, is your past.
Let me go back to the roots that you referred to. First of all, you are who you are by virtue of where you're born. I didn't create the society I was born into. In fact, I was born to parents that had very meager means. My dad was a sharecropper. He raised cotton on somebody else's land. Mm-hmm. My mother did teach school in a three-room schoolhouse. They came to Pascagoula. My dad worked in a shipyard. And so there was a society then that was wrong and wicked. I didn't create it, and I didn't even really understand it for many, many years. Look, I feel very strongly about my faith, and I have grown over the years. But in order to be a racist, you have to feel superior. I don't feel superior to you at all.
In the interview with Ed Gordon, Lott said perhaps the country needs a task force of reconciliation to discuss race.
A lot of, I think, what is wrong here is not enough communication, not enough understanding of how people feel and how, there has been immoral leadership in my part of the country for a long time. Progress has been made.
Were you a part of that?
Yes, I can't deny that.
Connection listeners, Lott has said that his birthday party comments were only meant to be a compliment for a 100-year-old friend, but the reference to all these problems over all these years has sparked a national debate on the past and present of racism in America. How do you read Trent Lott's words and apologies? Do you think he should resign as majority leader or even as senator? Could this saga be a watershed moment in America's conversation about race? We ask you to join us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And I'm joined for the hour by Will Salatin. He's chief political correspondent for Slate magazine. Hi, Will.
Hi, good morning.
And Eric Stringfellow is with us. He's columnist at the Clarion Ledger newspaper in Jackson, Mississippi. Good morning, Eric.
Good morning.
Okay, nice to have you both here. Eric, let me start with you if I can. You watched Senator Lott on television last night.
I did.
You have written in the past that you're not buying his apologies. Are you still not buying them?
No. I think, got to say that this one's probably better than the other ones, but here's the issue. The crux of the matter is that Senator Lott was talking about race, and until he comes forward and acknowledges that what I meant by these problems over all these years was race and the whole issue of segregation and integration and all that, until he acknowledges that, I mean, he can apologize until the cows come home. I mean, there hasn't been elocution up until this point. He hasn't done that.
So what is it that you want him to say that he's not saying?
That I was talking, these problems, my specific reference was to race, our racial problems. I was talking about black and white. And that's why we're here today. You know, yeah. We all know he was talking about race, but he's not said that.
Well, Will Salatin, you're saying that maybe he's not talking about race there.
Yeah, I'm actually one of the people who thinks that he was not talking about race, and that the thing that he has to explain is how he could have praised Strom Thurmond and overlooked that the whole centerpiece of Strom Thurmond's presidential campaign in 1948 was segregation. So it's a kind of cluelessness that I think that Lott is responsible for explaining. And I think in that sin, he is not alone. And that a lot of other conservatives who are trying to throw him overboard would like to do so without acknowledging that they suffer from the same problem.
I tend to side with Eric on this one, Will, when he talks about all these problems over all these years. It's hard for me to understand what he could be talking about if it isn't race. What else could it be?
I think it was a thoughtless remark, and I know that he has said it twice. He also said it in 1980. to my mind, that is not evidence that he was thinking very clearly about what he was saying, but that he wasn't, that he was trying to be nice to Strom Thurmond and trying to do to Strom Thurmond's record the same thing that Strom himself has done. You know, Strom claims, people talk about Strom repudiating his record. Strom never really did that. I think he is in denial about his record, and so is Trent Lott, and it's only now that Lott is being forced to come to terms with Jim Crow and his part in that. I think what Lott has said is that he was talking about national defense and crime and a bunch of other things. I think the truth is that Trent Lott was hardly thinking when he said that. Yeah, I mean, to believe that Lott was specifically talking about segregation and saying that he liked it better that way is to believe that he meant to end his career, because everybody who spoke at this birthday party for Strom Thurmond
and you were there, weren't you, Will?
They were being televised. I was not at it. I saw it on TV as it was being broadcast.
That's right. Well, Eric, is he finished?
He may be finished as a majority leader. I don't think he's finished as a senator. I think, just looking at the emails that I've received in response to the several pieces that I've written about this whole issue, I think he has tremendous support out there, even among black people. So I think he will be a senator and can get elected as long as he wants to be senator. As it relates to him being majority leader, I don't see how he can survive.
And is that a point of view that you find widely shared in Mississippi, that he really ought not to be representing the Republicans in the Senate in that position?
Well, I'm not saying that. I mean, I'm not sure. It's a real difficult question as a Mississippian, because clearly the state of Mississippi has benefited with him as majority leader in his leadership post. He's brought a lot of stuff here to Mississippi. And frankly, I think this is a huge opportunity for a lot of people here. I mean, clearly we've got his attention as it relates to race. So this is one of these golden moments where you can really, really get some things done. I mean, I don't think... if he steps down, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I think anybody over 60 in Mississippi comes from the same thing that Trent Lott does. I mean, so, if it's somebody else, I mean, I think the issues are going to be basically the same. I may not be articulated mm-hmm. like they will be in this particular case, but, I mean, let's face it. I mean, that was segregation was the law of the land back then. So, I think we need to be careful about the hypocrisy there.
Well, Will, you watched the senator on Black Entertainment Television last night. Do you agree with Eric that this, regardless of what happens to Trent Lott, that this is an opportunity to reopen a conversation about race which has not been held in some time?
Yes, I do. It's interesting. Eric used the word golden moment, and I think that pretty well captures the way. I mean, I've talked to black folks in the last couple of days who have the same feeling about this, that this is, they don't want Trent Lott to disappear, because they're afraid that the whole issue will disappear with it. And, this is a lot of reason why many Republicans want to get rid of Trent Lott, so they don't have to face up to these issues. As long as Trent Lott has to stay in that job, the spotlight is on him. He has to be acutely conscious of what he said and redeeming himself for it. And it may force the Republican Party to change the way it deals with affirmative action, with judges, with all kinds of issues that are of interest to blacks.
Right. And even last night, Senator Lott was, for the first time, any kind of retreat about away from Judge Charles Pickering, who's been nominated to the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals here. I mean, and to me, that was significant. And I think, again, if he leaves, I do think it's going to be business as usual.
Let's bring another voice in now. Jim Herrings, chairman of the Mississippi Republican Party. Hi, Jim.
Good morning.
Jim, you had a chance to watch the senator last night. What did you think of what changed in the interview on Black Entertainment Television last night?
Well, I don't know what changed. Senator Lott was very sincere. He was very strong. And I think, once again, apologized and asked forgiveness for very inappropriate remarks that he made. And I might say, if you don't mind, that we in Mississippi are taught that when someone asks forgiveness and apologizes, the burden shifts to us to accept that apology and give forgiveness, and I think that the vast majority of Mississippians will do so, and that they want him to stay as Majority Leader of the United States Senate.
Jim, the case is made often that if Trent Lott stays on as Majority Leader in the Senate, it's a good thing for the state because of the amount of power, particularly economic power that he has and the attention he brings to the state. If he leaves, is there anything more than just the economic loss if he loses that position, in your view?
Well, I think most Mississippians take great pride in the fact that Senator Lott has served with distinction as the Majority Leader. And prior to that, you know, he was Assistant Majority Leader, and then when he was in the House of Representatives, he had the office of Republican Whip. So he's been a leader in the Republican Party for years and years. We think it would be a great loss to us from an economic point of view. There are probably two people, Senator Lott and Senator Cochran, probably have done more than any other two people in the world to raise the quality of life of Mississippians in the past generation. And it would be a great loss to all of us, including African Americans in particular. The Nissan plant, that the first automotive plant that came to Mississippi, was because of Senator Lott bringing 6,000 new jobs, primarily to lower-income Mississippians. That sort of thing would not be replicated if he were not Majority Leader, in my judgment.
Jim, do you think that he is being held to a standard which is perhaps unique to the South, to Mississippi? If he was a senator from Maine, would we be having this conversation?
You know, I think Mississippians have, and Southerners, have a special cross to bear as a result of what went on during the Civil Rights era. And, by the way, I think, you know, in 1948, when Strom Thurmond ran for president, where Trent Lott was less than 10 years old, so his memory about what went on back then probably is not too good. But I think generally that Mississippians need, and all of us need to be especially sensitive to the feelings of minorities, African Americans, and to the feelings of people in the rest of the country on this very explosive issue. And I think Senator Lott showed last night that a conservative can be sensitive to civil rights. And I think that the people would take him at his word as to why he said the things that he did.
Eric, do you think he's being unfairly targeted?
No. I mean, I think that if you look at, you know, you've heard a lot about Robert Byrd and his remarks, and I don't know exactly what Senator Byrd said or the context that he said them in. You've heard about Ernest Hollins going back even further than that when he called Hispanics wetbacks. I mean, he was forced to apologize. I mean, you have a lot of talk about Jesse Jackson and what he said about New York City and Jews. I mean, I think it is different in that of all the people that I just named, I mean, he was, Senator Lott is a guy that was probably in a more influential position than all those people. I mean, so, but you just can't say what he said and not expect some sort of repercussions or understanding about it.
Connection listeners, we'd like to hear from you about what repercussions you think are appropriate under the circumstances, if any. Jim Herring, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
And Connection listeners, we'll come back after the break to take your calls and talk further with Eric Stringfellow. He's columnist at the Clarion Ledger newspaper in Jackson, Mississippi. Will Salatin, chief political correspondent for Slate magazine. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection on NPR. You're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio. My name's Dick Gordon. Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. Connection listeners, a conversation about the latest developments involving remarks made by Senator Trent Lott at the birthday party for Strom Thurmond. All these problems over all these years, the words that people keep referring back to in terms of trying to figure out what the sanction should be on the senator for the remarks that he made at the party. I want to go to Will Salatin here on this. Will writes for Slate Magazine. And Will, in the last paragraph that you wrote in a piece, just referring to the notion that perhaps there are different standards, you write the following. You say, if politeness to bigots, comfort with principles congenial to them, and amnesia about struggles for equal rights are now crimes worthy of ending people's careers, then let the Inquisition begin. Do you think the Inquisition may begin looking at what's happening to Lot now?
I'm afraid that it won't. I'm afraid that what's going to happen is that the Senate Republicans will throw Lot overboard as quickly as possible and, as Eric says, will resume business as usual, and that there won't be, you know, Lot is just the guy who opened his big mouth and let everybody know that he had, in my view, forgotten all about the civil rights movement, forgotten about Jim Crow, and pretended as though it never existed. And it takes that kind of amnesia to oppose affirmative action in the wholesale way that he has, as though racism no longer exists or as though the residue of it no longer exists. And so I sympathize with those who want to keep Lot where he is so that this won't happen and so that others will perhaps feel some obligation to remedy that.
But can I hear from both of you on this? It is, in fact, Lot's own people who are holding the longest, sharpest knives here. It is the conservatives. It is the people in his party. Are they just hoping to take him down before he becomes this great target for the Democrats? Is that the politics at play here, Eric?
Yeah.
I think that's part of it, but I think, let's face it, I mean, I think the conservatives in the Republican Party have been unhappy with Senator Lott for a while. I mean, I think for them, this is ammunition to make a move on it. So in that sense, I mean, yeah, you're right. But I don't know, in terms of the Democrats, in my opinion, has got to be real careful about this because, I mean, I think that they can overplay their hand, too. And race, and I've said this before, is one of these things that it's a notch above all these other issues that we talk about because of its residue and because of, you know, just where we've been in this country. And so I think if the Democrats aren't careful, they're going to just marginalize this whole issue and make it too political. And I see signs of that already.
Will.
Yeah, there are a lot of conservative pundits, conservative magazines and writers who have wanted to get rid of Trent Lott for a long time, not because they care at all about racial issues, but because they think he's ineffective or is too much of a good old boy, not enough of a movement conservative in pushing through their agenda, cuts too many deals with Democrats. To them, this is entirely insincere, this whole, you know, they're pretending to partake of the outrage over Lott's comments.
Their criticism is insincere. Is what
yes, they just want to get rid of him for other reasons. Some of them have actually been frank about it. National Review was quite open about saying, we wanted to get rid of Trent Lott before this ever started. We don't think he's a racist, but hey, this is an opportunity to throw him overboard.
Our telephone number is 1-800-423-TALK. Let's go first to Greensboro, North Carolina. Dorothy's on the line. Hi, Dorothy.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah.
I just had a comment, and listening to all of this that's been going on with Trent Lott's statement, in my opinion, I do feel that Trent Lott should be removed. Whether he steps down on his own or whether he's pushed out or whatever, he should be removed. And I don't think he should remain in the Senate. I think he should go back to Mississippi and represent those people since it sounds like that he's done that so well for the Mississippians. And also, in your opening comments, you were saying something about was he being a sacrificial lamb.
Yeah.
And I think that I do agree that he is being made a sacrificial lamb. I think that he's apologized, and I believe that we should accept his apology. That's what he's given, so we accept it. But that doesn't mean he should remain there. And in addition...
Okay, but let me stop you here, Dorothy.
Okay.
I mean, can't he best represent the interests of the people who voted for him by staying in Washington, by remaining at least as a senator from Mississippi?
Okay, well, then being in the Senate and being there as a representative of Mississippi, and he's done great things for the people, the Mississippians, and perhaps then he could stay there as a senator. But I don't know what good he would do for the country at large. he hasn't done. He was making statements yesterday, and I didn't see a lot of the interview on BET, but he was making statements about things that he would do now and that he would be in favor of now. I mean, why is he now in favor of that? And then the other thing is, the reason I believe that he's being made a sacrificial lamb is because a lot of the appointments that I've seen in the Bush administration, from the Bush administration, especially with the Supreme Court, with those judges,
yeah,
a lot of those people have the same views that Trent Lott has. And so George Bush, if he's the one, or if people in his administration are making these appointments, they all sleep in the same bed, so far as I'm concerned. And I think it's a scary thing. I mean, George Bush's administration is getting a lot of credit for bringing the nation together, but I disagree with that. I think a lot of that was done in the Clinton administration.
Let me just hear from Will Salatin on this, because if Bush is making a statement by saying nothing, watching Trent Lott go, is he not then implicitly criticizing some of the conservative members of the judiciary who he hopes to bring in, perhaps even his own attorney general?
No, he's not criticizing. Bush is not criticizing those members of the judiciary, because Bush is not the brightest president. He does not see connections between issues. What he tends to see is, and he's often talked about this, is what he calls "what's in people's hearts," "what's in my heart," and he doesn't understand the idea that people's hearts can be judged by their actions. So, he delivered these comments a couple of days ago against Senator Lott, saying that, you know, Senator Lott's words, you know, did not represent America, and he repudiated the words, but Bush is not changing any of his policies. He's not going to change the position, the judges that he nominates. He's not going to change the positions that the administration takes in court cases involving affirmative action.
But he's also not saying, the man has apologized, let's move on. That was something that the White House tried early on, but it's clear right now that they're running in the other direction.
Well, he did actually say that Senator Lott had apologized and was correct to do so. I think he did not then say it was time to move on. Perhaps that smacked a little bit too much of Bill Clinton to say that we should move on, although Senator Lott has not shied away from saying that.
All right, let's move from Greensboro to Charleston, South Carolina. Dorothy, thanks for your call. We're going now to Jim, who's on the line. Hi, Jim.
Good morning, Mr. Gordon.
Thanks for calling.
In a nutshell, my comment is that if segregation is a separation of people by race, then how is it that the number one group that has come down on this event is the Black Caucus? Not the Democrats, not the Republicans, but a specific group that has separated itself by race.
Do you think that they are taking that stand simply, precisely because they are the Black Caucus, or because they are all also Democrats?
Well, no, I believe that it is the Black Caucus. We keep saying that segregation is bad, and I agree. But when it's self-inflicted, you can't complain if the other side of the same coin agrees with you. There are so many organizations that are based on race. It's not about equality. It's about advancement. And we've got to get rid of that, and you're not going to get there by saying, oh, we're against segregation, but we want our own little Black group or our own little white group or our own little Spanish group to say that, oh, well, we're going to fight for the rights of our people, but we're going to say that you're wrong if you say that your people are different.
Let me hear from Eric Stringfellow on this. I think Jim's trying to turn the looking glass around here and looking at it from a different perspective. Eric, does it work?
No, and that's and his point is a point that's been made quite a bit, and with a whole bunch of different groups like you talked about. Well, let's just take the Congressional Black Caucus,
right,
that, since he brought it up. I mean, I think that that group formed out of necessity. I mean, I think all they're doing is trying to, they all have common interests, common constituents. All they're doing is pulling their resources and try to be a force and try to be a block. I mean, that's simply all it is. I mean, I think you can go to probably go to them individually and say if they didn't do that, I think the power that they have would be diluted. I mean, that's something that's formed, like many Black organizations. It's not formed out of a sense of superiority, I think we're better than anybody. It's formed out of a sense of necessity, a sense of wanting to belong in a sense of being able to relate to the next person more so than not. And I think his argument is way off base there. Now, some point in our history, maybe my son's sons will get a chance to see when those kind of organizations are not necessary. But in 2002, I mean, they still are.
All right, Eric, thanks for that. Jim, thanks for your call to Appleton, Wisconsin now. Nate's joining us. Hello, Nate.
Yeah, I think it's about time that this country have a brutally honest examination of the real truth of politics in this country. Racism has been the core of politics in the South for the last 100 years. I mean, it was the support of the Democratic Party for legal segregation and extra-legal lynching that gave the Democrats the quote-unquote solid South. This is the reason that poor white folks voted with wealthy white folks for the Democratic Party consistently. This is the reason why the La Follettes, when they were advancing their progressive agenda, had to go to the Republican Party. This is why Franklin Delano Roosevelt had to pack the Supreme Court.
Okay, but this is also the same party which, you know, brought in the Civil Rights Act and in effect brought about the demise of the Democratic hold on the South in the late 50s and the early 60s, right? I mean, let's move it ahead a little bit.
But this is the point, is that it was when the Democrats supported the Civil Rights Movement that the Dixiecrats, led by Strom Thurmond, and you did not have a Republican Party in the South until the Democrats supported the Civil Rights Movement. It was an incredibly explicit, overtly racist appeal that led to the Republican Party in the South. And this is not something from the past. We're talking about today. I used to know Lee Atwater socially in South Carolina, and he used to regale us with tactics that he would use. If he wanted to defeat a Democrat, he would print up a flyer with a black minister's name on it, saying that he endorsed this Democrat, and he would spread that flyer out in rural South Carolina, and that guy was dead. It was the Republican Party, whether you're talking about Jesse Helms, Trent Lott, you read the articles in the New York Times. His mother wrote an article threatening the life of an editorial writer because he was supporting the Civil Rights Movement. His uncle was the head of the successor to the Ku Klux Klan in that county. That is not something from the past. The Republican Party is using overtly racist appeals today to maintain their electoral hold in the Congress.
All right, let me turn, if I can, to Will Salatin. I mean, is that racism that Nate's talking about as overt, as much a part of the front page of political process in the South in 2002 as it was 30 years ago, 20 years ago?
Well, I think the short answer is there's less of it, but it's subtler and it's not gone. It is, you know, we forget how bad things used to be. I mean, that's how we got into this Trent Lott situation in the first place.
Right.
Things were worse before. They are better now. But they're not perfect. And the temptation to use racial wedge issues persists. And, you know, the caller mentioned Lee Atwater, and that's a great example. I mean, seems like every 10 years the Republicans say they're going to do outreach to blacks, and Lee Atwater was one of those people who said it. And yet, you know, always there comes along a new tactic, a voter suppression pamphlet, a Willie Horton ad, a Jesse Helms quota ad. You know, always the Republicans seem to fall back on, you know, the temptation to use racial wedge issues to attract white voters by speaking badly about or portraying blacks as some kind of threat.
Eric, what do you think? Does race still play such a dominant role in politics?
Oh, absolutely it does. And I think, Senator Lott can deny this all he wants, but I think those words were code words that he used a couple of weeks ago. They were code words that he used in 1982 or 1980. The same thing. I mean, of course, in Mississippi, all roads lead from race, and that's unfortunate, but they do. I mean, I think it's just something that's always been happening. I agree that it's not as bad as it was, but it's still there. It is a an issue. It is there is those people. I mean, the Council of Conservative Citizens that Trent Lott has identified with in the past. I mean, he can count votes. I mean, you can't. That's a part of his base. And quite frankly, I think, for his own survival, I think he needs to be real careful with how he deals with that if he wants to get elected. But is race and all of that still here? Of course it is.
And let me go back to Nate in Appleton and ask whether or not when Trent Lott makes an appearance like he does last night, you can look at that as a purely cynical effort to try and keep his job. But in what he was saying to Ed Gordon, in what he thinks needs to change in terms of the Republican Party, is there anything in that which is in any way indicative or heartening for you?
Well, I think what's interesting is that you're only going to hear these statements coming out of a Republican from the South when they've got the sword of Damocles a centimeter from their jugular.
And then can't you hold them to that?
Well, and what would be, I'll be interested to see what happens if he loses his majority leader position and the Martin Luther King bills and the affirmative action bills come up before the Senate, if he will in fact vote for those positions. The other thing that's interesting is you've got the Democrats are in a problem because if he goes and Mitch McConnell replaces him, I got news for you. Mitch McConnell is a horse of a different color, and he's going to be much more formidable in opposing the agenda of the Democrats than Trent Lott ever was.
Maybe that's why the Republicans are so anxious to move their own out.
I think so. And it's the movement conservatives who don't like Trent Lott. They want Tom DeLay type person, but the Senate is very different from the House. Tom DeLay wouldn't last a minute if you tried to pull the kind of garbage he pulls in the House and the Senate because the rules don't allow it.
All right, Nate, thanks a lot for that. We're actually going to pick that part of the conversation up when we come back after our break, because regardless of what Mr. Lott chooses to do or is told to do by his colleagues, this whole scandal really points in a new direction for leadership in Washington. Maybe I'm being naive. Maybe nothing will change. What do you think? Our number's 1-800-423-8255. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection from NPR.
Funding for The Connection is provided by Macromedia, the software company helping to redefine what the web can be. Available on the web at www.macromedia.com.
You're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio. My name's Dick Gordon. Our number's 1-800-423-8255. And we're talking about politics of race, with specific reference to Trent Lott's moment in the eye of the hurricane here. With me on the program, Will Salatin, chief political correspondent for Slate magazine, and Eric Stringfellow, columnist at the Clarion Ledger in Jackson, Mississippi. That's Mississippi's largest newspaper. 1-800-423-TALK to join us. Let's go first to Westboro, Massachusetts. Stephen's joining us. Hi, Stephen. Stephen, are you there? I don't think we have Stephen on the line, so let's go instead to Norfolk, Virginia, and Paul is standing by. Paul, are you there?
Yes, hello.
Hi, go ahead.
Hi, I just want to let you know that I'm a registered independent, but I'm also in the Navy, and I know that if anyone in the Navy had done anything remotely close to this, they'd be gone. With great power comes great responsibility, and the phraseology would be knew or should have known the ramifications of his actions, and he probably should not have to resign from the Senate, but it would probably be best if he stepped down from his leadership position, because either he knew what he was saying and he was irresponsible to say it, or he didn't understand the implications, in which case he should not be in a position of leadership.
But what you're saying, Paul, is that it's very much about what he said at the birthday party. This isn't you necessarily going back, as a number of people had, to examine voting record or political support that he was providing for people back in the 60s or the 70s. This is about what he's saying now?
Yeah, it doesn't matter what's in his heart, because only God sees what's in his heart. What it matters is the fact that he is in a position of authority. He's in a position of the public eye. His words are measured more closely than yours or mine. And therefore, if he wants to stay in his job, he needs to understand that. And if he doesn't understand that, then either it was, as one of your guests said, it was either a code, or and in which case he needs to be out, or it was just irresponsible remark, in which case he needs to be out. So I don't see how there's any. If an admiral were going to a retirement or a birthday party for a retired admiral who had fought tooth and nail against women joining combatant ships, and had raised a toast and said, "Admiral, you fought against women coming on ships, and we supported you then, and the Navy wouldn't have all these problems if you had had your way." How long would that admiral last? I mean, about a day. And I just think it's an analogous situation, and I think that it's silly for us to even be thinking about anything. I don't know if he's a racist or not. He says he's not. I don't know how he grew up. I grew up in the South. I moved all over the country, but I grew up in the South, and I remember segregated bathrooms and water fountains and stuff right. like that. And that was then, but this is now. And if he hasn't changed it till now, then no matter what he thinks in his heart, he didn't have... He could not come off saying that with such a cavalier attitude that he didn't expect ramifications. And if he didn't expect the ramifications, then that's reason enough to get him down anyway.
Okay, let's turn to Will on this one, because, Will, I'm interested in your sense of whether or not what we're seeing now is one man's attempt to rescue one particular position, that is Trent Lott trying to protect his job as majority leader in the Senate, or whether or not the leadership of the Republican Party is talking about this and saying, what's best for us?
Well, to the extent they're talking about what's best for them, I mean, there's a complete disconnect between those two things. I mean, the only person who might be doing any real reflection on this is Senator Lott, just because he feels the heat of the spotlight. The Republican Party is just trying to figure out how they can get out of this. They're not interested in thinking about it. I thought what the caller said was quite interesting about known or should have known. You know, there's no disagreement between Eric and me about that it's one of those two things. Eric
right.
thinks that Lott knew. I think Lott should have known. And I think that should have known. That word know is important. This is an intellectual process. You know, Senator Lott talked about his sensitivity. The Republican Party chairman who was on the show earlier talked about, you know, being sensitive to the feelings of Lott. This is not about sensitivity. This is an intellectual thing. This is about getting it, about understanding what Jim Crow was, what Strom Thurmond stood for, what segregation meant to the people who suffered from it. That's what Trent Lott needs to get through his head.
And that's an excellent point about when you really think about it, it's really questionable for the Senate to be honoring Strom Thurmond in the first place, in my opinion. I think the words there, too, which is why I have such a problem with Senator Lott's apologies, is one of the things he said was that he didn't realize that his remarks would create would be so controversial. And he also said that he didn't understand. He was surprised by it. Now, to me, that's somebody that doesn't get it. At the very least, it shows that he's racially insensitive. And I think, which raises a whole bunch of questions for somebody in his spot.
And the fact that it took the better part of a week for as many people to start trying to figure out what was going on as did says something, I guess, about Washington, Will.
Yes, it does. I mean, first of all, I think that betrays the insincerity of all these people who now claim to be appalled by it. You know, I mean, you know, I saw a column the other day that talked about how, you know, on days 5 and 6, there was no statement from the White after Lott issued his comment. There was no statement from the White House other than Ari Fleischer, the press secretary, you know, sort of blowing off the whole thing. And then on day 7, all of a sudden, President Bush is outraged about what happened. I mean, a lot of people heard this comment and didn't think twice about it. And then when they realized that it was causing an uproar, they professed to be indignant.
Right. Or they. I was really intrigued or amused by the people that were saying, well, particularly the Republicans saying that, oh, what? Trent's comments were misunderstood or taken out of context, which is, you know, malarkey. I mean, he said what he said, and there's no context except for the context that he said it.
Let's just speculate for a minute, though, here, Eric. Let's suppose that what we watched on BET last night was something of a deathbed conversion. Can Trent Lott, in or out of his position of the leadership of the Senate, provide some kind of broader leadership in maintaining this conversation about race? Or has he kind of blotted his copybook with, you know, one level of apology, realizing that wasn't enough, going to another level of apology right up to where we are right now?
Well, I think the key there is going to be whether or not the senator is sincere. I think I had a hard time listening to him talk about his four affirmative action, talking about if given an opportunity, he would vote for the Martin Luther King holiday again. To me, that bordered on pandering, okay, at this particular point. See, what else is he going to say, particularly to that particular audience on national television? I think in terms of moving this, you know, taking this whole conversation to the next level, I mean, again, I think that's why I'm not so sure he ought to leave. I mean, I think if, as long as he's there, we're going to have to talk about this. He's going to have to deal with it. His party is going to have to deal with it. When he leaves, if he leaves, again, it's going to be, we've done that. We've shown the world that we are not racially insensitive or racist. And so let's go on back to business as usual.
All right, let's go. Let's go to Cambridge, Massachusetts. Bruce is on the line. Hi, Bruce.
Hi, good morning.
Thanks for calling.
Thank you very much. I suspect that my comments are going to be relatively unpopular, but I'm calling actually from the People's Republic of Cambridge, Massachusetts, one of the heart of the most liberal sections of the whole country. And I've talked to a number of liberal folks, you know, who are just my neighbors and friends, and we just think it's a whole tempest in the teapot. I mean, the emperor has no clothes. He made no comment about race at all. He made no comment about segregation whatsoever. And I just kind of wonder, the people who are interpreting it as a racist comment are, we have the Republican leader who wants Trent Lott's job. Gee, that's a surprise.
Well, wait a second. Let's go back to what was said and what was intended by that, Bruce. I mean, a lot of people have spoken about the use of the word as code words. And if you're saying...
Well, he talks about it's a problem. And
what's a problem?
Well, that's an interesting question, isn't it? What kind of one-trick pony looks at an entire 50 years' worth of history and thinks that the only possible problem that had been discussed here was race? It seems to me...
Let's look at the actual words, okay, Bruce? Here's what he said. When Strom Thurmond ran for president, we, Mississippians, he's saying, voted for him. We're proud of it. And if the rest of the country had followed our lead, we wouldn't have had all these problems over all these years.
Right, and let's look at the context. He's at a birthday party for an outgoing senator. He's trying to give him an attaboy. He's trying to say, hey, you fought the good fight. I have liberal people, you know, coming up to me all the time and say, like, geez, I would have said the same thing. You know, someone ran for president. Do you think, you know, Trent Lott really knows what Strom Thurmond's platform was in 1948? Most people can't even tell you what Al Gore's platform was 4 years ago.
So explain the comment from 1980 then. If he was trying to give an outgoing senator an attaboy at his 100th birthday party, what was he talking about in 1980 to the same guy?
I'm not claiming that racism doesn't exist, and I'm not even saying whether Trent Lott is or is not racist. I'm simply saying that this was not a racist comment, and I think that people who are interpreting it as a racist comment are, gosh, what a surprise, the Republican who wants to replace him, the Democratic senator who wants to run for president here in our own state of Massachusetts, and it just seems to me that when you say the word problems, if you can't think of any other problems this country has faced in 50 years other than racism or segregation, it just seems you have a really one-track mind view on the whole situation.
If you're talking about Strom Thurmond and Strom Thurmond running for president in 1948, I mean, I just totally
disagree. Trent Lott was 10 years old then. You think he actually knows what Strom Thurmond's platform was at that time?
But Trent Lott, I wasn't even born in 1948, but I know what Strom Thurmond's platform was and what he stood for.
Well, Trent Lott, whether he's a racist or he's not a racist, I don't know. I've never met the man. But I do think he's a career politician, and I do think if he had been talking about race, he certainly would have been smart enough to know not to say that at a public event.
That's not what Senator Lott's record
suggests. He was not talking about race in his own mind, okay, because even he's not so stupid enough to say that.
And Will made that point earlier in the program, Bruce. But let me ask you whether it is or it isn't about race. You know the level of the debate that's on this right now. Do you think that anything productive can come out of it, or it's just politics as usual?
No, I think it's politics way beyond usual. I think if someone gives an offhand comment to someone's birthday party and it can take down the Senate Majority Leader, I'm really worried about free speech in this country. I'm really worried when people can say things which don't have any of the words which are being he's being accused of, and that it can be interpreted completely differently, that apologies are totally cast aside,
right,
and that we can take down the Senate Majority Leader on such a comment as this. I really am worried about free speech here.
No, I hear you,
can,
Bruce.
Dick, and I step in and
ahead,
say
Bill.
One thing here? This is the kind of polarization that worries me. White people tend to think of racism as an all-or-nothing proposition. You know, either you're a racist or you're not. And actually, racism, racial insensitivity, racial obtuseness exists in shades of gray. There's a spectrum. And what I'm afraid of is that people who think that Trent Lott was not referring to race when he praised Strom Thurmond will give him a bye, as the caller is doing. And I think that no matter which way you look at it, especially if you understand that that this was an important issue and that it cannot be overlooked, Trent Lott needs to be held accountable for praising a man who in fact ran for president on the issue of segregation.
And so, Eric, when we see the knives out in Washington, such as we're seeing right now, should we look at that as the best of Washington as well as perhaps the worst of Washington?
I think it's a little of both. Again, I think I do agree with the previous caller. He's talking about some people seeing this as opportunity, particularly when you look at some of the ambition inside the Republican Party. But it's also the worst to end it in that, you know, Senator Lott is just somebody that got caught in a real weak moment. And I think is this business as usual? Is this the way a lot of power politicians in Washington think? I think that's the question, and that's my fear. The other thing is that I think that, you know, he's right when you talk about the polarization and just how, I mean, we just see race in so many different prisms. I mean, you talk about shades of gray, but particularly when you look at black and white, I mean, I'm just tired of people making excuses for it. We need to call it for what it is if we're ever going to deal with it.
Eric, thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Eric Stringfellow is a columnist for the Clarion Ledger newspaper in Jackson, Mississippi. Will Salatin, thank you for coming in.
Thank you.
Will is chief political correspondent for Slate magazine in Washington. We talked a little earlier in the program with Jim Herring, chairman of the Mississippi Republican Party. Tara Murphy's our senior producer. My name's Dick Gordon. This is The Connection.
Funding for The Connection is made possible by Macromedia, the software company helping to redefine what the web can be. To purchase cassettes and CDs of The Connection, please visit www.theconnection.org or phone 1-800-909-9287.